From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we are talking about color with special guest, Jerry Cody. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Craft Commerce, a brand new e-commerce platform for Craft CMS. If you're a web shop that likes to create custom-tailored websites for your clients, you're going to love Craft Commerce. It's extremely flexible, leaving all the product modeling and front-end development up to you, and it's got a simple and intuitive back-end for content managers. To learn more and download a free trial, head over to craftcommerce.com.
Today, we're turning our focus to a topic that is fundamental to design, color. It touches most every person's daily life. It impacts how products, storefronts, print advertising, and of course, websites are perceived. It's a deceptively simple topic that reflects culture, portrays style, and can even alienate. Mm-hmm. Our guide today through today's complex and nuanced discussion is Jerry Cody. Jerry is a freelance designer and illustrator with a self-proclaimed color obsession. She's worked with clients of all sizes and is the author of The Pocket Guide to Color Accessibility. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. Well, as you said, I am a illustrator and designer. I'm originally from Canada, and now I live in the UK with my husband, Simon. And I do love color, I guess, because I am an illustrator. It's something that I've always been interested in. So it's just, you know, one of those things that I have really become passionate about, especially when trying to take it and use it, you know, on the web, which is another one of my passions. Mm-hmm. So in terms of other hobbies, I've been studying Japanese for a while now. Mm. We're going to Japan next month, which I'm very excited about. So hopefully I'll see plenty of color in Japan. So,
oh, yeah, definitely. I would say that Japan's design styles are lean towards the color spectrum.
Definitely, definitely. I'm very excited. It's going to be, I guess, like you could describe it as an assault on the senses. So I'm very excited about that.
Fun.
So before we get into talking about the details of color, let's shake our assumptions. What is color?
Well, that is also a very deceptively simple question. It's quite complicated. And I think the further you actually research it, the more complicated I think you realize mm-hmm. it is. So I guess in the most basic description, the spectrum of visible light that we can see is made up of different wavelength groups. So mm-hmm. each one of those kind of groups of wavelengths is responsible for different colors, like we would kind of imagine in a rainbow. So, you know, right. red, green, blue, that sort of thing. So color is basically what our eyes perceive when we see those wavelengths, whether they're reflected off of a surface or if they're emitted as light. So if we think about the topic of color with designers and developers in mind, well, especially designers, CMYK color is basically what you would find on printed matter. So mm-hmm. that's called subtractive color. So it basically means that it absorbs different wavelengths, which is different from additive color, which is what we would find on things like television displays, digital displays, computer screens, that sort of thing, where the red, green, and blue light is actually added together to reproduce the colors. So it's a pretty complicated question, but that's basically what it is and what the difference is between, you know, CMYK versus RGB color would be.
I find all of that stuff so fascinating, because color in and of itself, obviously we mentioned, it leans more towards the designer side of our things, but the fundamentals of color is based on science.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's, you know, super technical. It's very sciencey. It can be definitely, you know, you can go too far, I think, when you're trying to read it, because when I first started to really study color, I just, you know, you just have to draw a line, because it starts getting into like math and formulas and all that sort of thing. And it's like, I don't need to know all of that stuff. Like, that's just over the top. You understand, you know, the basic things like what matters to us as designers, what matters to us as developers, right. Unless you're super interested in working on hardware and screens, right. And that sort of thing. I mean, of course, that's different. But, you know, for us, we just really need to know the difference between different color gamuts like RGB and CMYK. And I guess a lot of that explains why we can't see the same colors on screen as what we can reproduce on paper and, right. You know, kind of vice versa. So as long as you kind of have a basic understanding of that, I think that's really all you need to know as a designer.
So why is color so important to design in all areas of design?
Well, you know, it's not just an aesthetic thing, which I think a lot of people, especially designers and developers, kind of think it is. You know, it's not just an afterthought that something you're going to add, you know, you design a bunch of wireframes and add the color in later. It's important because it's so emotional. You know, it's got a lot of meaning and message behind it, different cultures, all that sort of thing. But, you know, it can also help create hierarchy in a design. You know, it can help draw your attention to certain areas of the page. It can help, you know, the user on their flow through a website. It's not just aesthetic at all. You know, all that sort of thing is going to affect how a person can use a website. So it's definitely, you know, more interactive. It's more critical for web design because you can't really control how a person on the internet is going to view your website. Like, everybody knows mm-hmm. this with responsive design and that sort of thing. And the same right. thing, like, you can't really control how somebody is going to see your website in terms of color. So it's definitely very important to think about for that reason in web design.
And when you say that you can't control it, do you mean based on everything from, like, how someone has their screen set up?
Yeah,
or their
yeah.
devices set up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so color profiles. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different color profiles for different monitors out there. You know, designers, graphic designers, are supposed to calibrate their monitors all the time. Some people who are really hardcore about it, you know, they might recalibrate their monitor every day, like, just to get the color reproduction to look perfect on their screen. But the average person, like, just any person, really, I mean, the majority of people do not do that sort of thing with their monitors. So you have no idea how old their monitor is. You have right. no idea what kind of environment they're viewing your website in. So there's just so many different, you know, variables out there that you can't control.
Well, given that there's so much that we can't control, how do you properly use color on the web?
I think that's one, I guess, proper use of color is not really a term or a word that I would like to use. I would actually say appropriate use of color
right.
or talk about inappropriate use of color, which I think is a lot more important because there's so many appropriate colors out there to use. There could be a million different appropriate colors to use in a project, but there could be one very inappropriate color, you know, mm-hmm. or thinking about things like color blindness, you know, inappropriate colors to use would be colors like red and green. If a person has red and green color blindness, which we can talk a little bit about later, you know, you're not going to want to use those colors together. So I like to think about saying proper use of color could be a little bit restrictive. So I like to kind of talk about it in the opposite sense.
And I mean, even gathering based on what you said earlier, being appropriate beyond just considerations for color blindness, but there would be cultural considerations. What would be appropriate for something that's targeted to a certain audience that may have their own cultural perceptions about color, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And also, a lot of people ask me, you know, what would be a good color palette that looks appealing? But it's like, that's a really subjective question. It's just right. like, you know, it what one person might think of as a really nice looking palette could look absolutely hideous to somebody else. So it is definitely a subjective thing. And color alone is subject to trends. I mean, every, you know, like look at Pantone and their color of the year, like every
color
year,
of the year,
you know, like in the way that it's used in fashion and that sort of thing. So I think there's really just too many proper uses of color, and like you need to think about inappropriate.
So when I'm thinking about the proper use of color in the context of the web, it reminded me a little bit about when I was teaching at McEwen the basics of web design to students. And while they're graphic designers, they didn't have context of designing for the web. And so when I just gave them an exercise without giving them context of web stuff, just to see what they would do to, quote, design a web page, whatever they perceive, it's interesting how they decided to use color. And then I would ask them, okay, so how do you differentiate, or how do I know whether to click that headline or whether to click, you know, a word in that paragraph if the text is all black?
Yeah.
And that's something that I feel like sometimes we in the industry, we're here for so long that we just assume that we always start with the default of blue for links or some sort of different differentiation. But proper use of color is the difference between people understanding calls to action, whether that's a link, whether that's a button, whether that's a headline, and actually interacting with the page and with the site versus complete lack of understanding of where they are on the page.
Exactly. It's another good example I think I've seen, which is it doesn't always work, but I see a lot of print designers designing things for web, and they get really excited when they're given different pages, because sometimes they will make all the colors of each page different. Because, you know, I saw a website, it wasn't incredibly long ago, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, and, you know, it was a beautiful website, but every single page had a different color scheme, and it just, it felt very disjointed. And I think that is definitely like an improper use of color, because it just felt like you never really knew what that brand was. Like, was that brand supposed to have that color? Is that brand supposed to have this color?
Right.
So it's definitely something I think a lot of print designers do have trouble with.
Right. Like, 'cause color is context, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you keep changing some standard that you've set in one page, then what is the standard?
Exactly.
You know, how do they know when they navigate to another or deeper into the site that without having to, you know, search around and think so hard that they can click on a link?
Exactly. And so many people, I think, use difference, you know, just to something like a very basic example, like button colors, like you said, like a call to action. Just different colors throughout the site. And, you know, that's so confusing for a person who might just want to do, you know, one task throughout your site.
Right.
And it's the same. It's basically the same function, but everything looks different. You know, it can be really confusing and just, it's really unnecessary, I think.
Yeah, I would say absolutely. And I know that you started talking a little bit about print designers tend to go this way. And I kind of want to challenge the fact that we really have disparate ideas over the motivations of print designers and web designers, which is conveying information in a way that people understand what's going on and to take action, whether that's in a static form or in an interactive form. What confuses me is that sometimes people forget the leap that you need to put emphasis in a certain way and then have some consistency throughout, you know, like a magazine or whatever. So you understand that the next step is to flip the page.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, that's true whether you're designing interactively on a web page versus like a magazine or in a poster where the call to action is to visit the website or to phone a ticket, you know, stub place, right?
Oh, for sure. Yep. I've definitely seen just as many badly designed annual reports or,
right.
you know, something like that, where, again, the color looks very inconsistent and it just doesn't have that sort of flow to it.
So would you say, because I feel like sometimes we try to focus on how, okay, web design is so different from print and all these kind of things. But at the end of the day, user experience exists in all facets of design, right?
Yes.
And I feel like we shouldn't give print designers a free pass simply because they're designing for print. Because, for example, in industrial design, wouldn't you say that color is an extremely important factor in understanding how to use an object or how to navigate through space in an office, for example?
Yes, yes, definitely, for sure. I think one of the biggest things, you know, for colors like wayfinding systems, you know, which in a physical space, like that is almost like, you know, you're basically carrying a person throughout a physical space. It's very comparable to how you would direct a person through a website if you want to carry them, you know, through different pages. So it's definitely comparable. I guess, though, in some instances, like if you were just making like a poster or a brochure, like a one-off sort of thing, like in print, that's a different story because that's going to print and that's effectively kind of done. You know, like you can't really revisit it. It's already out there. You can't change it. But I guess in things like wayfinding systems in physical spaces, in industrial design, in websites, in apps, all that sort of thing, you have to think about the long term. What doesn't exist right now? Are you going to have a whole new section of your website down the road that you may need to be considerate about the color choices, you know, way beyond the site launch? Or is a hospital or something going to add a new wing on to their building? And currently all the different color wayfinding systems sort of thing, you know, they need to add something new, or like a transportation system or a subway system. So I think you can really compare those sorts of things more because they are more, you know, like a living, breathing sort of system where some print stuff is just, it's just done and finished.
So you both have given some really good examples of how color, I mean, how what I'm hearing is how color kind of helps a website be successful in terms of taking a user through, whether it's to navigate to new information or to click on a specific link or button. But what kind of impact does color have on the user itself, as opposed to how you try and draw them through the site, but how they're kind of experiencing the site?
I think if we want to talk about the topic of color accessibility, for example, you know, not everybody views color in the same way. So if you have a color vision deficiency, like color blindness or a form of color blindness, I guess one example that usually comes to mind for me is shopping. Like trying to purchase, say, clothing on a website, that sort of thing. There's so many websites out there, say you've got like a photograph of a t-shirt or that sort of thing. If a person has a form of color blindness, they may not actually know like what the color of the product is that they're buying. And I think that that sort of thing can drive customers away if they don't really know what they're buying. Or if you think about something like infographics, I see this all of the time on the internet, charts, different, you know, pie charts, bar graphs, any kind of chart with intersecting lines. You know, they might look really good, but a lot of them, you cannot understand what they are if you have any kind of color blindness or color vision deficiency. So I think it's not just how color can kind of guide you through a website, you know, in terms of hierarchy and helping you understand what a link is and that sort of thing. Because I think a lot of people do, a lot of designers do understand that, especially if you are a good designer. That's something that you are aware of. But I think you have to think a bit deeper, like about color accessibility and that sort of thing.
So like the situation you just described with someone who may be colorblind and they may not know what color a given product is, what's the solution for that? I mean, can you say this shirt is red and that has context for someone who maybe doesn't perceive red?
Yes. So basically, it's not really a difficult thing. It's just something that you really have to think about up front. So it's one of the reasons why you have to think about color in the beginning stages. You know, when you're getting your products photographed when you're having content strategists or people, copywriters, you know, writing your content for the site and descriptions, describing what your product is and describing what color it is in plain terms, like not fancy color names. So that's another kind of issue that I have with a lot of things on the internet. Sometimes you'll see a t-shirt. I had some great examples of this. One of the sweaters I saw on a men's website, I think it was called Woodland and Sky was the name of the color. So I'm like, you know, they had the name of the color listed, but like there is literally no way for a person who could not see color to know what the color of that was based on their description. So, you know, have a chat with the people who, you know, if you're working for like a big clothing kind of, you know, retailer, that sort of thing, if you work on a team like that and you see some issue, like talk to the content writers, talk to the copywriters, be like, can we just call this what it is? Like if it's gray, call it gray. If it's a dark red, call it dark red. If it's pink, you know, like if you use actual hue names, like ones that you'd think of in a rainbow sort of thing, really plain kind of English or whatever other language, you know, you're designing for, or if you've got any different languages supported on your website, just make it as plain as possible. And it's just going to make it a lot easier for everybody to understand what is going on. It's the same thing with, you know, directing somebody to click the green button to add this to your cart, which you shouldn't do anyway. Mm-hmm. But if you do, like, you have to just be more mindful of those kinds of things.
I feel like this is like the basics of even, you know, when we were talking about mystery meat navigation way back in the day, instead of saying like some kind of fancy phrase that maybe if it's a book website, it's like a character phrase or something like that in the navigation. But what they're really trying to go for is bio. You
know? Yeah.
We should just have the word bio.
Exactly.
How do you navigate these conversations with marketers and brand specialists? Because I understand why they want to have Woodland and Sky, which is
pretentious.
Yes, but maybe that's their brand. Maybe that's what they're trying to go for. But perhaps, you know, well, I mean, if I was approached to it, I would say perhaps put that in, you know, a paragraph description, but not in the drop down.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. It just reminds me of another website I saw where it was a search filter, like you said, like, you know, you drop down menu, like search by whatever color. And every one of those colors, instead of being sorted by red, green, blue, black, was literally, there was like one product under the name, oh, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like just Woodland and Sky, for example. And there was like one product listed under that color. So I think, you know, try to have the conversation with the people who are writing your content and say, listen, if somebody does have a color vision deficiency, and there are so many people out there, and if you've got a massive website that sells products where color choice is an option, like you really need to think about it. Because especially with clothing, because a lot of people aren't comfortable wearing colors that don't look good on them or they don't like. And it can be easy to say, you know, don't worry about it or whatever. But a lot of people are, you know, they have strong feelings about it. And of course they do. It's fashion. You know, everybody, a lot of people are just very opinionated about what they're wearing. So if you can't communicate to as many people as possible what that is, you know, they might just go not, you know, to your site. They might go to another site. You might end up actually losing potential customers. So I think if you put it in those kind of terms to like marketing managers and copywriters, I think it's a good way to kind of maybe tone back that little bit of silliness, which of course, like you said, you know, it could be part of their brand, but you know, maybe make sure you've got labels in there, you know, for search. Make sure that it's clear somewhere on that page that a person knows what they're buying.
I was watching one of those Discovery Channel brain shows last night, and it happened to be on color and color blindness. And this is not like official statistics that I confirm, but they said something like almost 10% of the population has some sort of issue perceiving color. That's a huge number if you're missing out on that audience and alienating them.
Yeah, exactly. it is a massive number of people. And it's not like a lot of people think that color blindness means that you can't see any color at all. And that is not true. Like, again, like the way that people perceive color differently, it can vary so much. You know, some people could have one type of color blindness, another person can have a very slight version of another. But, you know, altogether, that can really add up. It does, you know. When I speak at conferences, I will usually ask, you know, with a room of anywhere from, say, like 100 to 500 people, if there's anybody in the audience who's colorblind, to put their hands up. And I will always get somebody, like no matter how small the room is, there is always a person who will have a form of colorblindness. And that's on like one track conferences too. So it's not just like they've came to see my talk or anything. So it's going to like attract people. It's like overall, right. You know, like it is definitely a very, very common sort of thing.
Other than color blindness, is there other ways that people have issues with color on the web?
Well, I think it would be important to talk about not just color blindness as such, but just color contrast, so that people who have low contrast issues and just regular forms of vision problems. So I think designers need to understand that if you are designing with color blindness in mind, you're not only helping those people, but you're also going to help a whole group of other people, you know, like maybe your nan who just might have regular vision problems because she has old age, like that sort of thing. I think the more you think about color blindness and color contrast issues, you're just going to be more inclusive for as many people as possible.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, especially if you're designing, you know, a site that's info heavy or, you know, text heavy. I wear glasses, I wear contacts, but I don't really have any other general visual impairments regardless. But if I'm, you know, reading something way too high contrast where, like, let's say there's a ton of red or something, that's going to tire out my eyes, you know, way more and faster than if there was, you know, a better contrast choice in that type of thing. And I'm not colorblind, you know, that's something that impacts, quote, the majority of non-visually impaired people. And that's just regular contrast, regular stuff like that.
Exactly.
Oh, and another thing too, we had that episode on Accessibility 101, and there's a lot of people who have a variety of different types of disorders where, you know, like certain animations or things really bother them physically. And if you've got weird color contrasts and then you add pattern on top of that, even if it's not animating, that kind of thing could add distress to certain people or certain populations unnecessarily.
Yeah.
You know, so
for sure,
those types of things are definitely something you have to consider, especially, like, you know, again, the context of the audience needs to always be there. For example, you know, if you are if it's going to be a Japanese anime site where there's going to be a ton of color because there's a lot of characters and all those kind of things, that's almost like assumed. But if you're going to be designing a website for a health services company, and you're going to assume that there's going to be a variety of people with various ailments going to visit that site, you're not going to have the same type of leeway.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important, you know, to think about your audience when you're making color choices, like up front. And that's why it's something that you need to think about. You need to think about color right from the beginning of your project. It's not something that you can think about later and be like, I'm just going to design a bunch of wireframes, I'm just going to think about color later, it doesn't really matter. Because it does matter, you know, it can affect so much. And it's just so important to think about. It needs to be right up there, you know. Designers always talk about, oh, I need to have copy up front, I need to have the content, I need to have the photography. Well, you also need to think about the color up front, because that can inform so many other choices that you're going to make down the road. You know, like thinking about responsive design. So, you know, it could be easy to say, okay, well, on smaller screens, we're just going to shuffle this around and we'll put this button on a different background when everything, you know, scales down a bit. But you know, is that color choice going to work if it shifts around on a mobile device, like that sort of thing. So you need to kind of, you need to think about it up front and be more thoughtful about it. It just, it makes the whole process go a lot easier, and it's going to give a lot less problems in the end, toward the end of your project, instead of, you know, worrying, oh, we haven't thought about designing for colorblindness, we haven't thought about color contrast problems, that sort of thing. And at that point, usually it's too late. You know, everybody's run out of money and there's no time to fix anything. And sometimes, you know, that's when stuff just never gets fixed and it just gets left. And it's stuff that can be avoided or at least minimized if you just have that conversation up front.
Well, how do you make your color choices? Do you have like a process that you follow or a certain checklist you make sure you go through each time?
Well, it's something that I think I've been working on for a while, because there are so many different routes to kind of take with this. And I guess one of the processes that I've been working on lately has been, you know, the first thing to do is you need to research. You really, like, it's like the first step of pretty much any project. It doesn't matter if you're talking about color or anything. So if you're working for, say, a company and they've got branding guidelines and that sort of thing, of course, it's important to take that into consideration, because they might have things laid out for you that you already have to follow. So you're not going to have much, you know, leeway in coming up with new kind of palettes. You might have to stick with what they've got. But I guess if you don't have that sort of thing, you need to think about your audience, like we've been talking about. You need to think about potential cultural differences. You need to think about any geographic regions and that sort of thing, and whether colors, certain color choices will be inappropriate. And then you can kind of like strike them off your list. So it's a way to kind of minimize your choices at the beginning and make it a little bit easier to choose a palette. But you also should do a lot of competitor research. So I think a lot of designers will come up with like color schemes and they look way too close to other competitors' colors, which is definitely an issue. And a lot of people might think, well, it's not really a big deal, but there are companies out there who actually have particular colors copyrighted, which sounds crazy, but it is actually true. So, you know, if you are trying to design a website for a jewelry company that sells like wedding rings, you cannot use a certain shade of blue because Tiffany has that copyrighted, and you will get in trouble if you use that color. And I have seen it before. Like, I've seen a website that has been like, oh, well, you know, we'll just use like a Tiffany blue on our jewelry website. And it's not a good idea. So, you know, you might think that you are trying to be like that company, but you can get you in trouble. So do your research, you know, try to figure out which colors are not appropriate, which colors you can't use, and then think about, you know, what colors you can use. So at that point, you know, I would like to just play around with things. So if I've got photography from people already at that point, I like to use that for inspiration, especially if you know that a photograph is going to be used on a website, or if there's an illustration that's been done that is supposed to go on the site. You can just draw a lot of inspiration from that sort of thing, you know, taking into consideration your audience and everything that you've kind of made notes on up until that point. And I guess at that point, what I would do, if I play around and I got like a few different color schemes kind of worked out, I might take a few samples of those and do some sample color contrast checks, which I think is really important to do before you go back to your client and say, hey, I've got these cool color palette ideas. You know, you need to kind of make sure that those colors are going to work. So I like to use Leo Varu's contrast checker, which is fantastic. So at this stage in the process, I would take a sample button maybe and put some text over it and see if my idea for a button color or call to action color is going to have enough contrast with the text. And I'll do a few different pairs of different things like backgrounds, color, with body copy, background color of a button with a label, that sort of thing. And just make sure that it's going to be okay. And then at that point, you can kind of present your color concepts to your clients and be like, you know, here's some concepts. And do not show them in a mock-up, because that is definitely going to throw them off. They'll be more interested in looking at the design than the color choices. You know, they'll be like, oh, but I don't like how that text looks. It's like, no, you need to just present it like a palette. You know, like, just show it in basic steps. So at that point, if you can get approval for one of those palettes, at least you know that you're going to be able to make that work, because you've already done a few like contrast checks. So eventually, you know, you can work it into your design. And then like as a final step, I do like to do a bit of research, user testing. It's always great to have somebody who is colorblind to take a look at your site once you have it, everything in place. And you can always do like another contrast check just to make sure that like the developers haven't done something in such a way that you might have not planned, just to catch so many final problems with some color contrast. And that's basically what my process is for color. Like, you know, it could go much deeper than that, but that's generally
sure
how I would do it these days.
What I love about that entire process is that you've done all the testing and research way before you send anything to a client.
Exactly.
I feel like a lot of designers sometimes shoot themselves in the foot if they send something to clients right away. And of course, they're not designers. They'll look at it and they'll say, yeah, I like it. And then if you do testing after that.
Exactly.
And then you have to go back and tell them like, actually, we're going to have to tweak this, that, or the other. Then they'll either get annoyed, confused, you know, just avoid all of that altogether.
Exactly. Because if you test major issues up front, it's a lot easier to say to a client, okay, you need to understand, like, this is like the concept and it could change a little if we implement right. this color scheme and we find that we might need to, you know, make a few adjustments. But it's not right. like you're going to come back and say, actually, we can't use that particular shade of purple because we didn't test it and it's actually not contrast compliant and we actually need to make a drastic change. Like, it's just much easier to just do a few checks up front. It doesn't take long, and once you get in the hang of doing it, it kind of becomes second nature. You know, you don't need right. to kind of have a checklist, because you already kind of know what you need to do before you talk to a client.
For sure. Now, I kind of want to talk a little bit more about that testing part. So we kind of established that testing is a good thing and that we should do all that before going to a client. But we also established that everyone perceives color, even those without any particular color deficiencies, differently. And I feel like everyone on the web has heard that story, the 41 shades of blue from Google. So with all of that in mind, people looking at color differently in general, and really you've got every shade in the rainbow to consider, you know, how much data is enough to make a solid color decision? Like, when do you stop? What is too much?
Yeah, I think when I heard that story, I think I probably rolled my eyes a bit because
right.
I just feel like, you know, like you said, the very fact that people do perceive color so differently makes it even more ridiculous. Like, to have 41 right. shades of blue, and how do we know that people can even tell the difference between those apart? Like, it's right. just, I think if you've got a more significant shift in a color, like literally, is it a blue button or is it a green button? Or even if it's like, if you want to be teal versus blue or something, I think that's different. But if you are spending that much time worrying about 41 different shades of blue, don't tell me you don't have bigger fish to fry.
Right.
You know, like, maybe you should be spending that time making sure something else is more accessible, and maybe Google can afford to do that because they have the resources and that's something they can do. But, you know, if you're just like a design, like a small team, just, you know, you need to draw the line.
At one point, does intuition and our personal years of experience come into play?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I think, again, as long as it's not an inappropriate use, then you could be there forever trying to find whatever the best color is. But, you know, there may not be one. Like I said, like for a large company like Google, maybe they saw some results from that. But I mean, for the average client, for the average website, you definitely should be focusing your time on something else, I think. So, you know, try to make your website more accessible in other ways. Like Derek Featherstone, Simply Accessible, he says that, you know, accessibility is a journey, not a destination. Right. And I think you really need to think about that. Like, you need to think about ways to make your site as accessible as possible. But whatever you do that's going to help is better than not doing anything at all. So your time is valuable. You need to think about more constructive ways, I think, to kind of deal with A/B testing. So
what is a constructive way? Because I feel like sometimes A/B testing can be really deceptive, and we make decisions where it's like, well, this performed better, but does that actually mean it performs better overall? Does that actually mean it's a better perception of the brand long term versus, you know, some short term thing? For example, I know a lot of people test, okay, green buttons versus red buttons for a call to action, which one's going to get the most presses. Mm-hmm. But should that be the priority versus is this on brand as well? Like, how do you interpret A/B testing? Like, for example, okay, this blue is getting a lot of action, you know, like, but is there a situation where you're like, well, maybe it is, but we're not going to go that route because X.
Right.
Like, how do you interpret the A/B testing?
I guess it kind of comes down to like, what's more valuable to you as a company? Like, is it more important to have your brand recognition and that sort of thing? Or is it more important to just simply have that kind of, you know, conversion on a call to action button? Everybody's different. Personally, I would try to find a happy medium, you know, something that's going to reflect the brand, that's also going to attract customers and lead them to the right place to buy a product that they want to buy. So, you know, I think you just need to be a little bit, not go crazy about it, you know, just try to make the right decision based on your company, I guess.
So with all that in mind, is there any single approach or like a magic bullet for using color that can give you a really solid foundation for basically all users?
That is definitely a difficult question, because I would say there's not a magic bullet to using color. And I think that's why people find color. Many designers say like, oh, I'm really bad at coming up with colors. Because I think it's because they're given so many options. There are so many opportunities. There's so many combinations. There's so many different schemes to use. Where I mentioned, you know, trying to figure out which colors are inappropriate from the beginning are going to help you make better, more appropriate color decisions. But on top of that, if you've got things like, let's say, a chart or an infographic, like I mentioned earlier, if you can combine that color with a pattern and make sure everything is clearly labeled, you know, that's something that more users are going to be able to understand. You know, if you've got a link and it's a red link in a black paragraph of text, somebody with low color contrast vision is probably not going to be able to see that red link in that text. So, you know, make sure it's underlined. So I think it's not so much about the magic bullet to using color, but more about how you actually use it in different circumstances, like in infographics, like in links. Just, you know, make sure that link is underlined so that person knows what to click. Make sure that there are no things like the color names on t-shirts or products or clothing, that sort of thing. If you can give more information in those circumstances rather than just relying on color, then that's definitely going to create a more positive experience for all users, you know, regardless of what their color perception is.
Now, in terms of implementing color on the web, what is your process when you are working with a developer? Do you give them, you know, hex values, RGB values? What is your approach to handover? And then does the developer stick with what you gave them, or do they implement it in their preferred way?
Well, what I've been doing recently, I haven't been working with too many developers recently because I have been focusing more on illustration. But on the last big project that I did, what I did was I personally went and I just set up a small style guide. I just coded everything out, very basic myself. I put all the colors in. I did use HSLA, hue saturation lightness, with the alpha channel. And I just made sure that any elements of that website that that developer needed to use and implement in a full prototype was already there, so that I just made little swatches with all the codes already there so they could just copy it and use it. So there's absolutely no confusion about what they need to use. It's not like in the days where, you know, you had like a Photoshop file and the developer would have to go in and actually sample that color. Like, I've seen that happen so many times. And I think that's where you end up with having so many inconsistent colors. You might have like 5 different or 10 different instances of a color, when in reality you just need the one. And
right,
I think if you as a designer are able to just go in and set that up in a small little style guide yourself, deliver that to the developer, and it will just make things go so much smoother, because it's you kind of driving that style guide, and delivering it to the developer just makes things a complete breeze.
So I'm curious, why did you use HSLA versus something like RGBA?
Well, I've been using HSL or HSLA for a while now because it's a bit more intuitive to use. So it's great if once you get used to it, you can actually change it in the code without having to really jump back. Like, if you needed to, you can change it in the code, especially if you're somebody who likes to design in the browser without having to jump back into, say, Photoshop or Sketch or a color picker kind of app sort of thing, and figure out, you know, what the hex code or the HTML code for a color is. So for anybody who might not be aware, HSL is hue, saturation, and lightness. So the hue value is a number on the color wheel from 0 to 360, like, you know, 360 degrees. So 0 is pure red, and any of the other colors in between would be like, you know, green, blue, purple, yellow, that sort of thing. The saturation value is a number between 0 and 100, where 0 is 0% saturation or gray, and 100 is 100% or fully saturated. And then for the lightness value, you have a number between 0 and 100%, where 0 is black and 100% is white. So you can actually see, if you go in and start to play around with this, you know, if you know that you want to have a lighter red, you know, you can just go in and say, okay, well, I want to increase the lightness. I can just type it into the code, into that value, and it's done. Like, you don't need to jump back and think about a hex code and be like, oh, I have no idea. Like, you can't really work that out in your head. Like, you need to go into a color picker. So that's why I really like HSL. And of course, with HSLA, you have an alpha channel. So the value there was 0% is fully transparent and 100% is fully opaque. So I just think it's such a powerful model. It's just great.
What do you think about some of the, like, a SAS, gosh, and I'm not even sure what the right term is, but like, you can transparentize something. You can, oh, I can't even remember all of them. That's what I've used before. What do you think about developers relying on adjusting through some sort of preprocessor syntax versus adjusting the HSL values?
I would say I don't have a great opinion on this, mainly because SAS is something that I've kind of stayed away from for as long as possible. It's not that I'm not really interested in SAS. It's just that I try to not do my own developing, unless it's on like my own website. I prefer to work with developers these days. But I would say it's probably better to kind of have a value already in place in the style guide, because if you're giving the developer the option to kind of change the transparency in SAS or whatever, you're just kind of introducing more instances or more inconsistencies. Mm. So the more you kind of keep it in the style guide in basic CSS as much as possible, I think you have less of a chance of just adding really unnecessary things.
Interesting. I'm going to slightly disagree with you here. I definitely think that we should have standards set, especially we don't want to have like 41 different shades of blue at the end of the day when you started off with one shade to work with. But I feel like when you're working on the web, we need to step away from perfectionism. And we do need to have an open discussion, an open line with the developer so that they can make intelligent decisions. For example, do we really need to give them the actual shade of gray when they could do a percentage of black and they can intuitively understand how to do that? You know, those types of things. I feel like there's a happy medium here. You know, in regards to dictating like set colors, because generally speaking, the way I like, at least me and Emily do it, is we start off with like our main, like say three colors for the particular brand. And then we manipulate using CSS the various shades of those.
Right.
Instead of like dictating every single particular, you know, opacity for all of that. And I feel like that is, I think, a good way to move around, especially if they're the base colors are set and that's not changed, then at least any particular variation is still based on all of that, as opposed to like, let me find something completely different to work off of.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's kind of up to, I guess, the designer and the developer and whatever they prefer to do. And like I said, like I haven't really worked in SaaS because it's not something that I've ever done. And I've kind of just worked with some developers who haven't really used it. But, you know, whatever works best for that particular project is definitely, it's a personal decision.
Absolutely.
As the developer who gets the stuff, I appreciate having the ability to know what the base value that I can work with, and then I can set transparency to it. But it's really nice when someone tells me exactly what I need to do, because the last thing I care about, like I want it to look good and everything, and I want it to mirror what Leia's vision as the designer is, but I've got 20 other things to worry about. So if I have 20 specific values that Leia's like, this is what to use, I'll be like, sweet.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so there's also that.
Yeah, I think there's
less of me to have to think about.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, like there are developers who like to have that sort of thing laid out. And then there are also developers who are more design inclined, or they're more creative developers, and they like to kind of have that kind of openness and kind of creativity and not that kind of restriction. So you just need to think about, you know, what does that developer that you're working with, like what do they prefer? Mm-hmm. And like you said, have that open conversation. You need to know like, what is the best route to take in this particular project with the developer you're working for?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, this is such a massive topic that we've tackled here. And I feel like we've literally just brushed the absolute surface of it all. But before we go, do you have any final pieces of advice regarding choosing an attractive and accessible color combination?
I would say one of the most important things is to just try to not make any assumptions about anything. You know, don't assume that a person can see a color. Don't assume that a person is going to be able to see such light contrast text. If you aren't sure as a developer, you know, about a particular color choice, you know, you can ask a designer, or just ask, you know, shout out on Twitter. Just say, is there anybody out there with color blindness who might want to look at my website? And a lot of people out there are just going to say, yeah, they are super willing to review your design. And also, I would say overall, my two biggest points would be check your work in a contrast analyzer before and after, and always make sure you have two pieces of information if you're designing with color, especially charts and labels and that sort of thing.
So when you are testing, what are your favorite tools that are out there for people to use?
Well, my number one tool for designing, because I am such a visual person, I design and illustrate, Color Oracle is my favorite. It's a color blindness simulator, and that simulates the most severe forms of color blindness. That is really indispensable for me. I also use LeoVerou's Contrast Checker, which I mentioned earlier, and that is very, very useful for checking the contrast ratio between text and background colors. Mm-hmm. And if you need help with color schemes or any of that sort of thing, which I know can be super difficult, I would recommend an app called Spectrum. And that is fantastic for coming up with different types of harmonious color schemes if you don't really have that confidence, or if you just want to play around with it. Like, it's very flexible, and I would recommend all three tools for sure.
Fantastic. But before we finish up, we do have our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. Are you ready, Jerry?
I hope so.
First question, morning person or night owl?
Oh, morning person.
What's one of your guilty pleasures?
I would say Japanese Enka. If you don't know what it is, look it up, but don't judge me.
What software could you not live without?
Illustrator.
What profession other than your own would you like to try?
I would like to be a barista, which is crazy, but I would love to. That would be fantastic.
What profession would you not like to try?
I feel like I've just thought about this. Probably anything to do with math. So like accounting, which is a shame because I do my own accounting. So
if you could take us to one restaurant in your town, where would we go?
I'm going to actually say my hometown, and I would say Mallard Cottage, which is in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada.
Very cool.
What kind of food is that?
It's kind of like home style, very Newfoundland, kind of inspired, very hearty, very local. Everything is kind of sourced locally. It's fantastic, and you should all go.
If you could meet someone famous, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh, that's really difficult. I have a lot of people, but I'm going to say Robert Smith from The Cure.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Probably flight. I think to fly would be amazing.
What is your favorite band or musician?
Oh, The Cure. Just answer that one.
All right, last question. Pancakes or waffles?
Definitely waffles.
Very nice.
Belgian waffles.
Oh, specific. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Jerry.
Thanks.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at HelloJerry with one R. And you can also find me on my website at HelloJerry.com.
Awesome. Thanks again, Jerry. This was great.
Thanks so much for having me.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Craft Commerce.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and Devotee.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we finally dive into Grunt and Gulp with Dan Tello of Viget Labs. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for other upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.